If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. Cutting through the clutter. This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome, my friends. Bienvenue, welcome, and quocio to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. It's another day. It's a special day. My birthday, in fact. And I thank everyone who sent me birthday love and pictures of Oliver Cromwell, another tyrant who was born on this day. Yes, it wasn't just me who was born on this day. There's other people like Oliver. So it's probably fitting to tell you that one of my middle names is actually Oliver. And that name was given to me because my father was big into Oliver Cromwell, the butcher, a Jogadair. Yeah, I'm actually partly named after Oliver Cromwell. He wanted it to be my first name, but my mum said, no, I'm not going to allow that. I'm not going to allow that at all. She didn't like Oliver Cromwell so much. And also, I grew up in the 17th century. I have explained this to a few people before, but no one really understands how true that is. Almost all my memories of being young include me and my sisters dressed up in 17th century clothing and running around campsites full of people dressed in armor. My house was filled with halberds, pikes, muskets, swords, and even a cannon here or there, would you believe? Because I promise you, it was true. I'm not sure if that led me to being a historian and a writer, but it certainly encouraged me to see through a lot of the nonsense and gave me a thirst for rebellion and revolution, of course. Growing up in the 17th century definitely gave me a unique perspective. And back then, the Sealed Knot Reenactment Society was 8,000 strong with live music all weekend, beer tents and festival atmosphere wherever you roamed. Like all kids, I took my experiences for granted. I didn't realize how important a historical perspective would be to my own development as a human. Growing up during the time of the English Civil War gave me a very unique view of the world, but it also gave me a good understanding of a society divided. For the majority of my time in the Sealed Knot, I was on the parliamentary side of the war. I was a roundhead, baying for the blood of the royalist scum, and this division also often played out in my friendship groups. All the kids were left to their own devices back in those days in the Sealed Knot, running around the campsite, free as can be, and we enjoyed it very much. We would hoard together and have tree battles and skirmishes in the woods with sticks and swords and sometimes a few stones thrown in. And when things got heated, all the children would divide themselves into two main camps, royalists and parliamentarians. Of course, following in their parents' footsteps. The world which was created by the adults would be adopted and played out by the children. We would follow in the footsteps of those we camped with, lived around, and grew up alongside. This is normal. Such division has happened since the dawn of time. We are naturally tribal creatures, and once we have decided on a tribe, we very rarely switch sides. However, the regiment my dad had formed, Colonel John Birch's Regiment of Foot, split in two eventually. There was an element of the regiment who wanted to take what my father had created and make it theirs. Again, once you have chosen your tribes, it's hard to go backwards. Half of the regiment left Birch's, and my father went on to form the Queen's Guard, which swapped its allegiances and started to fight for the royalists. A new tribe formed. I should also note that after my father had left the Sealed Knot, by the time the new millennium had started, the infamous Dick Dellingpole joined Birch's Regiment of Foot. In fact, I only found this out because he was presenting the TNT Comcast event last year in Newport. And when he heard my name, he ran off stage to where I was, right at the back of the hall, just to tell me that he was a member of the regiment my dad had formed, gave me a handshake and a hug. Again, I'll say it. From the fires of division, new tribes are formed. Now, talking about tribes, the Weekend Truth Festival is almost upon us. If you would like to see all of your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then please listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shemarani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizia, Mark Atwood, David Clues, allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. It's not that far away either. It's only a couple of weeks now. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to bring is a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes, as food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will all be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruefestival.co.uk. But don't hang around, because only a limited number of places are still available. And also to remind you, for a complete list of shows and our schedules offered on TNT, simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, right here on TNT.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
As some Americans are currently reacting with shock and dismay to see mostly peaceful protests being manhandled by the police at many US college campuses, something we'll talk about a little bit later in the second half, here's a nice reminder that as bad as that sounds, it could be a lot worse. On Wednesday, an Iranian court sentenced a popular rapper to death for his participation in a mass month-long anti-government protests that swept the nation in 2022. Going to win them no friends at all. Here with the story, join me now, is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Tell us more, my friend, please.
Absolutely. This is interesting and shocking, as it were. There's no secret society Illuminati stuff here. It just is what it is. But this person happens to be 33 years old. Okay. So the 33-year-old Iranian activist and rapper who has recently been involved in anti-government demonstrations, who's been handed down a shockingly draconian sentence by the Iranian courts, is one Tumij Salehi. He was first arrested in October 2022. What did he do? Did he murder someone? Did he rape someone? Did he steal money? No. He publicly backed the so-called anti-hijab protests, which swept the ultra-conservative Islamic country. This was something that lasted for months, and he was a big vocal proponent, and he's kind of like an influencer, as it were. So I guess they're going to make an example out of this guy. They're going to put him to death. This is shocking. Here is the update. As confirmed by his lawyer, who's quoted the court's ruling as saying, quote, Branch 1 of Isfahan Revolutionary Court sentenced Salehi to death on the charge of corruption on earth, end quote. Wow. The state laid out its case focused on a highly ambiguous charge of spreading, quote unquote, propaganda. Salehi's lawyer further described that the court, quote, in an unprecedented move, emphasized its independence and did not implement the Supreme Court's ruling, end quote, while noting that, quote, we will certainly appeal against the sentence, end quote. The charges further centered on the Revolutionary Court accusing him of, quote, assistance in sedition, assembly and collusion, propaganda against the system, and calling for riots, end quote. In September of 2022, Iran's Islamic so-called quote-unquote morality police arrested 22-year-old Iranian Kurdish woman Mahsa Amini for, quote, improper hijab, end quote, as she entered a subway station. Activists say she had been beaten and later died in custody, while Iranian authorities claim she suffered a natural health episode. State media and officials described it as a heart attack. Then she fainted and hit her head on the ground. Her death sparked, as I indicated earlier, months worth of protests across major cities featuring anti-government slogans and clashes with police. Some international reports say that in total over 500 demonstrators died, while reports said dozens of police and security service personnel were killed and wounded. Iranian authorities at the time attempted to tie the raging domestic unrest to an externally supported destabilization campaign by Tehran's enemies, Israel and the United States. As for the rapper and his immense popularity and influence in Iran, Sky News has observed that Salehi, who has 2.3 million followers on Instagram, had posted videos after Amini's death talking about revolution and resistance. Yep. Iran, alongside Saudi Arabia and Egypt, leads the Middle East in number of executions every year. In 2023 alone, Iran hanged at least 834 people, which was an eight-year high. This was partly because the Islamic Republic has recently launched a new quote-unquote war on drugs crackdown, but also amid geopolitical tensions, it has executed suspected spies in greater numbers. But if you look at this report, Johnny, maybe I'm a little off base here, but a lot of this, you know, some of these things that we're seeing taking place right now and, you know, are, you know, here in America and other places where people are gathering together in protest against their government using what is being labeled by their government as anti-government slogans and media reporting things and painting people one way or the other. Eek. I sure hope this isn't where we're headed in the United States of America or elsewhere, my friend. But what say you about the execution of this young man?
Yeah, completely unbelievable news, isn't it? If Iran wanted to make friends, then they go about it the wrong way, don't they? I know when a lot of us were saying about the fact that Iran struck back as Israel, we said, thank God, you know, someone in the region is doing something to go against these tyrants. And a lot of people, of course, they rise up and they say, but Iran are evil as well. And it's just evil against evil. We do know this. You can't be naive about it. Iranian history is really, really complicated, and where they are right now is partly created by the Western powers. I mean, the Islamic Revolution wouldn't have happened if there wasn't a backlash against installed Western leaders or Western aligned installed leaders within Iran. So I think we've got the West has also, like, really historically, I've got a bit of responsibility for the situation in Iran. There is miscarriages of justice all around the world. I mean, we'll be talking about miscarriage of justice with the first guest, so we can expect it. But when you hear a story like this, it's completely tragic. Now, why for spreading propaganda would they give a death sentence? It just seems like it works against them. I just don't understand this mentality. But this is something where obviously they're trying always the same. It's the same tactic, isn't it? It's let's make an example of them. Let's make an example of them. We do this in the West. We do this in Britain. We do this in America. We do this all over Europe. They do it in China. They do it in Korea. It does not matter where you are. There are people who get the sharp end of the stick, the rough end of the stick, the dirty end of the stick every single time. They are the ones who are going to be made an example of. And of course, it is unjust, completely unjust, completely unfair. I can't even start to think what there's friends and family. How do you try and appeal such a decision? then there's the other thing that rings inside me. There's this element that says, well, the Iranians want you to feel a little bit like this, so you're angry with them, and then they'll turn around afterwards and they'll take away the death sentence and say, oh, look, now we've just given him a life sentence. Aren't we kind? And so there's a, you know, it's a little bit of a weird Islamic revolutionary front sort of PR campaign, I think, as well, mixed in there too. Because if he gets executed for this, then, of course, that's going to be something that is used as ammunition against the Iranian regime, especially right at the moment, right at this moment in time when they've got to be the strongest. It's terrible, terrible news. Do you know if he has any family, any children or anything?
Oh, unfortunately, I'm not familiar with his personal story, Johnny. I was just reporting on this conviction, which is wild to me, but I'll look into it for sure. What's interesting is, as you're pointing out here, is like, why would they do this? Because it's not going to help their cause, the Iranians' cause, the government's cause, because this is going to create a martyr out of this young man if they do actually execute him, and it's going to make things a lot more difficult for the government moving forward. But I think that's, these things are done intentionally for that purpose. There's always this reset, this revolutionary thinking, order out of chaos, et cetera, or perhaps the powers that be just simply never wanting to give up the power that they have are just plain stupid.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that analysis of a very tough situation. I think we'll get on to talk to our first guest soon about more injustice in our own systems. And I think this is one of the things I see in the chat as well. A lot of people are saying, you know, worry about what's going on in your own home, your own country. And a lot of this can be distraction as well. I pray for that man. I hope that he comes out safe to the other side, and that this all gets sorted out. Thank you very much, Ruckus, for joining me. I'll see you in the second hour. You're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
TNT's Jason Allbourne.
In today's Australian newspaper, an horrific hit piece was delivered against Julian Assange, with the headline, Assange's sordid tale of treachery. It reads, Julian Assange is a criminal, a fabulist, and an undisciplined, arrogant, workshire fraud who lacks an education while remaining a mannerless vulgarian. The WikiLeaks founder is no journalist. Well, that's Alan Howe taking no prisoners, himself a history and obituaries editor, deciding to write a 9-minute piece to basically pull apart a fellow Australian as he tries to get out of prison, where he's been locked up for 5 years in maximum security for the work of being a journalist.
Weekends with Jason Allbourne on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. We don't rock. We talk. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. My first guest we have on this Buster birthday edition of the show is one of my favorite people I've met in 2024. Every time we speak, he gives me some sort of important information that makes me a little bit wiser. Graham Moore is a common law and English constitution expert and founder of the English Constitution Party. You can follow him, and you bloody well should follow him, on X at Graham H. Moore. That's Moore with two O's. And find his website, EnglishConstitutionParty.com. There is no more an appropriate day to speak about what we're going to discuss than on Oliver Cromwell's birthday. So, Graham Moore, my friend, welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show. Tell me about this very important case you are about to take to court. That's of Charles Staple versus the police.
Right. Well, thanks for inviting me back on. What we've got is a situation where, so let me make this clear to everyone listening. There is a law called the Criminal Justice Act 1988, Section 134, and it is called torture. It is a criminal offence internationally and domestically. It come via what's known as UNCAT, which is the United Nations Convention Against Torture. And since 1988 and its incorporation into English law, not once has it ever been charged against a British police officer. So making sure everyone's aware of this, all of the NGOs, all of the so-called human rights groups, there have been 1,888 deaths in police custody, either through restraint or in a cell, in a police, and we're not talking about prisons, we're talking about in police custody, not one single one of them, not one police officer has ever been charged with torture. And torture doesn't mean pulling people's fingernails out. We're talking about the UNCAT, right? So United Nations Convention Against Torture, incorporated into English law in 1988. We're talking about their definition of torture, which is unlawful violence. It must be a police officer or a state official. And if those two things are matched, it's for the police officer to prove that they were not acting unlawfully. Charles Staple was beaten, handcuffed, and a police officer smashed his head on the road surface when he's already handcuffed behind his back, face down on the floor, smashed his head on the floor four or five times. It's all on video. Suddenly, the police sergeant that did that, his camera doesn't work. Very lucky we had independent journalists videoed the whole thing. There was a trial because the police arrested him for assaulting a police officer. And that trial took 3 days. And this was during lockdown. So the first part of the case was he allowed to be there? He challenged it with what's known as a case stated to the magistrates. The magistrates threw the case out against him. The police officer carried on with the assault in a police officer and then changed it to attempted because there was no evidence that he assaulted anyone. In fact, all the evidence showed that the police were unlawfully assaulting him. Again, one of the other officers, again, we've only just got his name. This is 3.5 years later, attempted on camera to cut his airway off, put his glove over his mouth and his nose at the same time and was squeezing. So what we've done is we put in an application, or Charles Staple put in an application to the Attorney General under Section 135 of the Criminal Justice Act to privately prosecute all four officers for torture. The Attorney General then denied and said, you can't, by the way, we're the first people ever to make an application for that since 1988, completely said no. We are the first people to apply for it. Again, making sure people are aware, because of that, it went to judicial review. Judicial review kicked it out. They didn't want to touch it. So now we have a tort in the High Court tomorrow with Charles Staples. And if you go through the list of torts, and there are many, misfeasance in public office, trespass against a person, wrongful arrest, assault, battery, and then you've got negligence. There are a number of torts that are being lined up, but there should be a tort of torture because under the Criminal Justice Act 1988, Section 134, it is now illegal. So that means there is already a criminal injunction against police officers committing torture against you, right? We've always had it since 1640, but now they've got this Section 135. They are vetoing international law and domestic law, and for the first time ever, or since 1640, an Englishman can't get justice for torture. And that's what's in the High Court tomorrow. The major point is they've just switched the judge on us. It was a good, we had a good common law judge. It's now been switched out with a woke judge. I know that because I've already done the research on the judge. And just to make sure people are aware, today we went to Westminster Magistrates Court, where two police officers are charged with ABH. That means actual bodily harm. Let me just make sure, especially the Australian audience, are listening to this. In Sussex, in England, a 93-year-old Australian expat, a carpenter that worked all his life and come to live in England, was in a care home for dementia. He had one leg because he had diabetes, and he was in a wheelchair. The police were called to the care home, where they proceeded to taser him, pepper spray him, and assault him with batons. They then handcuffed him and dragged him out of his wheelchair to the police station, where someone decided this guy needs to go to hospital. He died 3 weeks later. Those two officers was in court today in Westminster Magistrates. When we went in there, there's nothing up on the boards. Justice needs to be seen to be done. Their names and addresses were not on any of the descriptors to say what the listings are. We asked at numerous desks. Everyone knew that they was going to be there, but no one could tell us what court. And eventually we got hold of the manager of the court and said, justice needs to be seen to be done. These are two police officers that have committed a very serious crime against an elderly gentleman. We want to know what court they're in. And eventually they told us. Now, when we went in there, they have pleaded not guilty to actual bodily harm. They've elected for what's known as a non-jury trial, but at Crown Court. All I'm doing is making sure everyone's aware that charge of ABH should not be ABH. It should be torture under the Criminal Justice Act, Section 134. We've now sent a number of letters to Switzerland, the United Nations. We've also sent letters to the Judicial Committee in the House of Commons. You can't get away with doing this to a 93-year-old man with dementia, with one leg, and dragging him out of a wheelchair, tasering him, hitting him with batons, and pepper spraying him. He then dies in hospital, and they think it's just ABH. All of the charities, no one said a word. The only people putting any form of pressure on the police or the CPS is us. So yeah. Again, your Australian audience should know the British are lying to the international community. They have a veto against torture. It is a pretended law, and what we need to do is keep pushing it forward. So, I mean, that's the objective. Tomorrow, I mean, we're hoping to get in touch with the family because they need to strongly object to ABH as a single charge.
Yeah. We're going to have to go to a quick news break, but we are going to be back very soon. And I have some comments on this, and this is extremely interesting. Your work is amazing. I'm so glad you're coming back on for a longer piece tomorrow as well. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
Now, where trusted newscasters deliver the day's news at the same reliable time. TNT Radio News.
That sounds awesome.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. A grand jury in Arizona has indicted 18 Republicans, including Rudy Giuliani and former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, on charges of conspiracy, fraud, and forgery. This action is related to their involvement in submitting false documents declaring Donald Trump the winner of Arizona's vote in the 2020 presidential election. Federal investigators are examining whether U.S. tax dollars have supported research in China on enhancing pathogens with pandemic potential, such as those seen in COVID-19.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show. I'm talking with Graham Moore. We're talking about obviously extremely important stuff, especially about the police. And we've got only got about 5 minutes left. I want to say this is exactly why I do police auditing, Graham. I was just around the corner the other day, around the corner from my house. I was on my way to breakfast, and it's online. You can go watch my auditing online. And the police were putting a man who was obviously having a mental breakdown, a really big man, into the back of the van, and they were doing a fairly good job. And I stood there with a camera just to be okay. They're doing a good job. And I was saying it on camera, you know, they're doing a good job. At the moment, they're doing it right. That's what we want to see. We want to see them do it right. But the moment they do it wrong, they hide, they obfuscate, they all of their footage goes missing. And the woman, one of the police officers came to me and said, "Are you recording for your own enjoyment? Is that what you're doing? Because this guy's having a mental health breakdown. So you shouldn't be doing that." Now, she was giving me way too much information anyway, but my enjoyment is nothing to do with it. What it is that you cannot trust the people who are currently in power. So what do you expect to happen tomorrow, Graham?
Well, so again, making people aware of the Criminal Justice Act 1988, Section 134, torture, it's very important that they understand that you can bring a case under universal jurisdiction under in another country, because the British signed up and agreed to that. So if the case gets kicked out from tort tomorrow in the High Court, we expect it will, we are bringing both the cases, and again, people need to be aware of this, it will, the lead tortfeasor and the lead criminal for torture will be King Charles III, because he is the head of state, right? The British signed up to this, and everyone should be aware, lots of people in this country, and when I speak of country, I speak of England, right? Because I'm not a British unionist. The major thing that people need to understand is that the British police are Crown servants, not public servants, right? So that means their boss is King Charles III. And under a corporate tort, the chief constable or police commissioner in the case of Charlie Staple is a joint tortfeasor. They are all individually liable. So the direct answer to your question is, if it gets kicked out of court, we are picking it up and we are bringing the case in Texas, in the United States of America, under the Alien Tort Act and under the American Constitution, because they signed up to UNCAT. We've already had a joint conference in the United States of America, in Texas, and what we're going to do is start putting that in place and then see what happens. The last time this happened was with a guy called, he was the head of the Liberal Democrats, which was Sir Vince Cable, and a number of Nigerians. He was responsible on the board of a company, Royal Dutch Shell, for the murder and execution of 9 Nigerians in Nigeria who were eco-activists. And they tried to bring the case under the British jurisdiction. They wouldn't accept it. So what actually happened was they brought the case in New York City, and lo and behold, there was an out-of-court settlement within a fairly short space of time for $15 million. This is going to go to a jury in Texas and could be anywhere between $100 million and $1 billion, because it's all constitutional and it goes in front of a jury. And so the British want to be very careful what they're doing here. Kicking out cases is not a good idea when these cases can come under universal jurisdiction torture.
Yeah, I'm looking across at the chat, and Dark Commission is saying corporate police, corporate courts, or registered a company house. When you explained to me about how, and a few weeks ago I was talking, I think, I can't remember what it was about, but you mentioned that, you know, the police aren't working for the people. And, you know, that's even as a police auditor, I don't realize that. I'm out there thinking that they work for me, but of course they work for the Crown. Of course they work for the Crown. And that's obviously a big contradiction. Graham, this type of work is massively important, especially with holding account the people who are really they are above the law. They are the law.
Exactly.
So thank you so much for doing this. You promise you'll come back tomorrow and tell us all exactly detail, a little bit of a longer interview, and tell us what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're at the Royal Courts of Justice, 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, Charles Staples. And again, this is a torture case. So yeah. Thank you for having us on, and I'll definitely be back tomorrow.
Yeah, awesome. Graham Moore, I can't give you anything but love. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us all about that. Cheers.
No
good
problem.
Luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
Right. You are listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you and includes steps like know your warning signs so you can act early, make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts. Reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member, or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
One scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
When the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
I'm relying on luck, but who knows if it'll be on my side.
When it comes to disasters and emergencies, it's not a matter of if, but when. Take control. 1. Assess your needs. 2. Make a plan. 3. Engage your support network. Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell.
No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Wow, Graham Moore is awesome, and I can't wait to see how that goes. I mean, he's a guy who's really, changing things. And no one is giving him a platform to speak about these things. So I'm so glad that TNT has given me this platform that he can speak on. It's fantastic. I really appreciate it, of course. So welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. All my guests today are people I have masses of respect for. My second guest is also making his second appearance on the show. You may have just seen him quickly pop up on the screen and pop away. Brian Lupo, also known as Canacon, is a former combat marine, business owner, journalist, podcaster, and a strong advocate of medical cannabis for combat veterans suffering from PTSD and other ailments, which I agree with. He is a contributing writer for the Gateway Pundit, where he reports on the election integrity. You can follow him at X at Cancon, that's Can with two N's, Cancon Actual, and watch him at Rumble at rumble.com/cancon. Welcome back to the show, Brian. Can you explain what happened during the election in Georgia in 2020 and why it was important to start off?
Well, I really wish I could explain, but the unfortunate part is that nobody can explain what happened in the 2020 election. And we might get some resolution here with this President Trump RICO case with the other co-defendants in that case. You know, going back to That night on 2020, obviously, we know the counting shut down in the middle of the night at the State Farm Arena in Fulton County, Georgia, which is the stronghold of it's the largest population county in Georgia. The last time I was on the show, we were talking a little bit about the mail-in ballots, and we kind of ran out of time, and I didn't get to deliver, the so-called punchline of that point that I was making. So in Fulton County in the 2020 election, knowing what was going to happen with COVID and everything else, and sending mail-in ballots to every single breathing individual in the state of Georgia, the county of the state Fulton County went out and bought these machines called Blue Crest sorters. And what they are is they're a machine that is designed to process mail-in ballots as they come in. So the mail-in ballots slide through, they separate them, they scan them in, so you have a digital image of the ballot. But most importantly is they confirm the signature on the envelope as it's going through. And that was kind of the thing that we were told as they're pushing these universal mail-in ballots on all of us, that we're saying, President Trump was adamant about it. Attorney General Bill Barr was adamant about it, that mail-in ballot is rife with fraud. We've talked about the Jimmy Carter report from, back in the early 90s, where he was saying that mail-in balloting is the number one way to promote fraud in an election. And so a lot of people were reluctant going into 2020 as we had this mail-in balloting. Well, everything was done and they said it's safest election ever, most secure. We got through everything. We are verified certified the results. And we know that this is true. Well, they had all these court cases, that got thrown out on standing procedural grounds. There weren't really too many cases that were heard on the merits of the evidence that was brought in those cases. And now that they brought, and this is where they got a little too brazen for their own good, they brought criminal charges against President Trump. And if you're going to bring criminal charges against somebody and say that you claimed it was a fraud election, well, your immediate exoneration would be, was it actually a fraudulent election? And so you have a lot of these defendants now, and one in particular, his name's Harrison Floyd, who is actually arguing, and his attorneys argued this before the judge and said, what if we prove that Trump won the election? The charges go away. And so they submitted these subpoenas to Fulton County for all these records, most of which don't exist, by the way. We've done these records requests over the last couple of years trying to get a lot of these records, and they'd simply respond that they don't exist, or they would send us the records and they would be incomplete records like poll tapes that did not have the proper signatures on them, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the biggest, most shocking things we got is Fulton County filed a motion to quash those subpoenas. And the Secretary of State, they eventually agreed to comply with the subpoenas in a limited fashion. They amended it a little bit, but that threw Fulton County under the bus, because if the Secretary of State is agreeing to comply with these subpoenas, then Fulton County kind of has to as well, right? That's kind of their parent organization to them. So Fulton County, in the motion to quash the subpoenas, they were going through what Harrison Floyd's counsel wanted to get from them in discovery. And there was this shocking hearing that I have on my Twitter page. It's under the highlights. It's about 8 minutes long. And you can watch the Fulton County Council, the representatives for Fulton County, arguing that it would take 52,000 hours to hand over in discovery, the signatures, but most importantly, the templates that were used to verify signatures, because they didn't use those $2 million machines that they bought to sort the ballots. They didn't use them at all. There was a huge hiccup with them. They admitted this on the record, that these sorters were not used to verify signatures. And so they wanted 52,000 hours to get the signatures. The templates that were used to verify signatures. So they were implying that somebody sat there and manually verified all these signatures. Well, then what came forward is a sworn affidavit, which is now sworn testimony in a court, from the Fulton County Board of Registrations member, Mark Wingate, who came forward and said that in the Jeff Clark disbarment hearing that took place a few weeks ago, he testified that he had tried to get chain of custody documents from Fulton County. Now, this is the man who's tasked with certifying the election. He's the guy that's supposed to go through and you know, discern all the information, say, yes, this is good, this is good, this is good. They would not provide him any chain of custody documentation for the 2020 election. But most importantly, they did not do none at all signature verification on 147,000 mail-in ballots in Fulton County alone. And that's just, that's unacceptable.
It's unbelievable. It kind of like, you know, these sort of nuances in the way voting is done nowadays and the way they try and introduce these sort of things. It kind of reminds me of like the hanging chads and other cases where they basically use another excuse to why this president should be elected or this president should be dismissed. So you're telling me they're saying 52,000 hours they're claiming. How are elections supposed to work if it takes 52,000 hours to count votes and to verify things in the first place? I don't understand how they can even think this system is viable. Shouldn't all of these sort of machines be banned from being allowed to be used?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. What they're saying is that it would take so long because there's 800,000 registered voters, I believe, in Fulton County or however many it is. And they would have to go through the registration, which is where the registration card where the voter, you know, fills out the registration and use that signature. But if the voter for some reason didn't have that signature, they would have to go to a whole nother database in order to find that signature. So, you know, the 52,000 hours in and of itself is shocking, but now imagine them having to do that during a manual verification of signatures in the 2020 election and have people sitting there and saying, you know, comparing the signatures side by side and saying, well, this one, we don't have a signature for this one. So we have to go look in the DMV database and the, you know, Medicare database, whatever it is, to find a signature to use to validate, which, by the way, is outside of the election code in Georgia. That's why it was taking such a long time, but or that's why they say it will take such a long time. They didn't do it at all in the 2020 election.
It's extraordinary. It's only American democracy at stake, I suppose. So it doesn't really matter that much, does it, to them? Going on a little bit to what we're seeing at the moment, we're seeing lawfare being used against Donald Trump, of course, and they're trying every sort of effort. Today, they announced indictments of people like Giuliani, etc., or recently they have. I'm not sure if it was today or not. What do you see happening in this case? Is this all going to be a dirty election this year? Is this what we can expect?
Well, they're trying everything they can to get this case through before the 2024 election. And I think that's going to kind of be to their demise because, like I said, a lot of these defendants are going to argue, you know, at least one for sure, because I've spoken with him. He's been on my podcast several times now. They are going after the fraud itself. That is going to be their absolute defense, is that if there was fraud, then there is no criminal case. The RICO case goes away. And I would argue that the RICO case actually goes a little bit further because you had people that knew that the proper laws and procedures, the most fundamental law, verifying signatures to ensure that those ballots were cast by who they were and not just somebody that collected them out of a mailbox or collected them out of a post office box and filled them out for their own, to validate that those were true lawful voters. And so I love seeing it. You know, you alluded to briefly another indictment, and that's in Arizona. They indicted the 11 electors in Arizona. And the same thing's going to happen over there, hopefully, is that somebody argues that the election in Arizona was not legit. We saw the Carrie Lake trial from 2022 over here in the midterms, where it was discovered that hundreds of thousands of ballots were verified. They verified the signature in less than 3 seconds. And they have video evidence of this. People that are just on the screen, click, 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 as fast as they can. They're not validating anything. There is no validation there. There is no security there. That is just somebody sitting down and trying to get through a job as fast as they can.
That is unbelievable behavior. So who gets held to account if they do prove that there was election fraud? Who is actually responsible for all of this and for organizing such a debacle?
Well, so that's another problem that we have right now. And this is also taking place in Georgia. These entities, they get caught, you know, with their quote unquote hand in the cookie jar. They get caught, you know, breaking the election law, and all they get is a slap on the wrist. They get what's called a consent agreement or a consent decree or a consent order. And basically, they just have to say, well, we did it. It was an accident. We won't do it again. And that's all there is to it. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the signature verification to what I was saying. It also, the same exact thing happened in the January 5th runoff. So you're now talking not just because the presidency wouldn't have been swung just by Georgia alone. However, the U.S. Senate would have been, because you had Warnock and escaping my head for a moment. But you had the race between Warnock and Perdue and Loeffler. And I can't remember the Democrat senator, it's escaping my mind. But you had two Democrat senators that were elected out of Georgia in the 2020 election and the 2021 January 5th runoff. Neither one of those had signatures verified in Fulton County, the most populous Democrat stronghold. And that's control of the Senate. It's a plus two majority right now in the Senate. That was literally control of U.S. Senate in that election.
Yeah, these things are literally life and death for some people, because, of course, that means that the Ukraine and Israel bill could be put through. I mean, it was going to probably go through anyway. Well, so with all of this clear misbehavior, if they were to look at all of the election process around the country during 2020, do you think they'd find the same sort of anomalies in different states other than Georgia?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We've been documenting a lot of these anomalies throughout the entire since 2020. Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, Georgia, Florida. There's a lot of discrepancies. Texas had a lot of discrepancies. You know, and the problem is that nobody in the mainstream media will cover any of these. It's always a cover up. They just run the typical headline, safest election ever, no evidence, false claims. They continue to run that stuff. I mean, I've broken stories in Texas where the Democratic National Committee president, who was running for Tarrant County judge in Texas, one of the largest counties in Texas, was caught on, or had somebody that was caught on a police body cam saying that this woman was paying me to ballot harvest for her. You know, and the guy was arrested for ballot harvesting. He was convicted of ballot harvesting, and the woman that he accused, her aide went and bailed him out of prison. So, I mean, there's obviously a connection there. But after I broke that story back in 2022, after I broke that story, they said it's past the statute of limitations. There's nothing we can do. And of course, that woman went out and generally, in a roundabout way, called me a racist because she's black.
Well, that's a bit of an obvious turn, isn't it, nowadays? I mean, it's exactly what people do. They look for anything that they can claim virtue to hide behind, and then just create a virtue wall so no one can attack them. This is unbelievable, especially with this being such an important issue. What can change this? What can change this in the next election? Because we've got another election coming up. Do you think it's going to be as rigged as the last one?
I think we have a slew of people that are awake to what happened in 2020. And that's on both sides of the aisle. You know, when you poll about the 2020 election now and the 2022 election, over a majority of Americans, and that's all parties, believe the 2020 election had fraud that impacted the outcome of the election. Rasmussen has put polls out on this. They've done polling on mail-in ballot fraud and finding that 25% of people that participated in mail-in balloting committed some sort of fraud knowingly. And it impacted the election. Rasmussen with Heartland Institute did a whole study on this. As far as fixing it, I don't think we did enough to get it fixed in 2024. However, somehow they overcame the cheat in 2016. I think ever since we've had machines implemented in this country, there's been a certain amount of obfuscation to our elections that people don't understand what's actually going on. But nobody was as glaring as Donald Trump in 2020 versus Joe Biden, who campaigned from his basement, couldn't put a coherent sentence together, was making racial remarks, racist remarks throughout his campaign. Nothing was more obvious than the 2020 election. And that's why it's woken a lot of people up to what's going on.
Completely extraordinary. You say there's just no, I mean, we all know this, but there's just no air for a story like this on the MSM at all, because really they are complicit with all of this, I suppose.
Yeah, the only thing that's ever going to get us out of this is hand-marked paper ballots, hand-counted at the precinct level. We need to get away from decentralized counting. We need to get away from taking all the ballots, compiling them in the one region and giving a handful of people total control over the count of those votes. It needs to be done at the precinct level, precincts of 2,000 or less voters. It needs to be something that neighborhoods can get actively involved in, monitoring it, checking it out, compiling the data at the end, and completely decentralize our elections right now.
You're completely right. Listen, thank you, Brian Lupo, for coming on today and doing good work. I mean, you're doing really good work. Keep it up, my friend. Keep it up.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Anytime, my friend. Right. As for all you watching and listening to this Johnny Vedmore show, thanks for being with me again. I completely appreciate you being here. Don't go anywhere. Why not go to tntradio.live and get in the chat with all of the people who are discussing stuff. I see the chat going, it's full of people today having big conversation. Just brilliant to see that sort of activity. I thank everybody for getting involved. I love having a conversation from all angles. So all of you guys, not only the guests, I like to hear what everybody has to say. I like to hear your views and opinions. Stay tuned for the second half of the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk. ENT.